It's time for the gardening show.
I have a European beech tree.
I've got one, too, and I dearly love it. So.
Oh, I love it, too. I hug it once in a while. Sounds silly, but what the heck, you know.
Never hurts.
Got a question for your gardening expert, Dr. Dean Crosscoff? Call 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957.
I have a rose bush, and it is 52 years old.
Horticulturist Dr. Dean Crosscoff is your host on the program filled with helpful information on lawn care, tree problems, gardens, crops, pests, everything and anything gardeners need to know.
I'm hoping that maybe I can get it moved without it dying.
Dean spent almost 30 years teaching horticulture at Michigan State University, and he served as the integrated crop management agent for Southeast Michigan's MSU Extension Service. The Gardening Show and your calls coming up next on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957 if you'd like to join this conversation, and we have lines open. So, hey, I know people were out there enjoying the fourth, but that doesn't mean that gardening questions aren't out there too. So give me a call, especially if you've never called before. You know, we're always interested in talking to new people. 1-800-859-0957. If you can't call me for whatever reason, that doesn't mean that you can't ask a question. You can email me, wjr.com/thegardeningshow is my website. Down at the bottom of that site, you'll find a email form, and you can do that. Will from Bloomfield Township, Dorothy in Mount Clemens, and Alan in Charlotte. Hopefully you're listening, because I'll get to your questions today. Now, Dorothy in Mount Clemens brought up an issue. I put a lot of information on there related to things I think are interesting and important going on in our gardens, or just in relation to further information from somebody that's calling in. And again, let me give you that number just in case you're thinking about that. 1-800-859-0957. The problem is, and Dorothy pointed it out, she emailed me on Sunday after, of course, the show comes out on Saturday, couldn't find some things. Well, we don't update until Wednesday. I apologize for that, Dorothy. I hope you found the information. But, you know, if you do get out of sequence with the show, easy to do. If you look at the website, wjr.com/thegardeningshow, above the Bonide ad or logo in there, you'll find podcasts. It lists podcasts. And, of course, that's the transcription of every week's show. You can actually listen to me again if you want to, or just check and said, you know, did I actually say what I think I said? Probably I did. And below that, though, you'll find under each date the information for that week's update. So, Dorothy, the information you were looking for, and this is a wonderful website for those of you who are thinking about new plant material or something like that. Many of you know, and probably some of a great number of you out there probably had Jesse Saylor in horticulture class at MSU. Tens of thousands of students went through his courses, and it was plant ID. And not easy, but it was always interesting. And certainly, Jesse's a great teacher. He really is. But he also developed a site where you can plug in information, height, type of tree, color if you'd want, things like that. And it'll click up a list. And it's all Michigan trees, and you can trust the information that you see. Dorothy, that's the information you were looking at. You'll find it on the information from Saturday, June the 20th. And it is up there. So if you happen to be looking for that information, check that out. And it's in, I don't remember what it's in. It's talking about, somebody else was asking the same type of question you were, Dorothy. And you'll just have to look for it. But you can see Jesse Saylor's name in bold. And now if you just click onto that, you'll find it. You'll go right to the link. 1-800-859-0957. I hope you're enjoying the fourth. I certainly am. We're having a great time. But that doesn't mean that I don't have open lines. And certainly I'd like to talk to you. This is an opportunity. You know, if you've been busy, hopefully you've had the weekend off, and you can get some things done in your garden. And when I'm working in my garden, I find all kinds of interesting things. One of the things I found in my garden this week was daylily streak, which is a fungus that causes streaks in the plant, obviously, from the name. And it can, over a period of time, it weakens the plants. You can lose a few once in a while. It's more of an annoyance than a danger, but it's there. So if you're not familiar with lily streak, or you're lucky enough not to have it, you don't need to worry about it. However, if you do see some streaking in your daylilies, take a look at my website, wjr.com, /The Gardening Show, by Wednesday, especially from a holiday weekend, and I'll have information up from University of Clemson about daylily streak. It's mainly, basically, you just got to do some sanitation. 1-800-859-0957. And that is the thing that, you know, is basically starting out now. One of the other interesting things, and I didn't see it, but I am expecting to see them, an old friend popped up this week, and I literally mean popped up. Japanese beetles have been seen in Michigan. So I'll put some information again on my website, wjr.com, /The Gardening Show, about Japanese beetle, our old friend. Also, I'm going to put in Dr. Dave Smitley's information on grub control products, because there's two different issues that we've got with Japanese beetle, and that's what makes them such a royal pain. Certainly, the grub issue is important. We've got lots of new materials on the market, so you don't get the wrong material. The opportune time for application of these materials is in about 2 weeks. So you've got some time to get out there, check your local garden centers. There's still some of it around. At least the last time I was in my garden center, there was, if you want to do the control. And I've got information on which one to use. The flip side of that is, of course, the adults are now flying. And they eat everything in the Rosaceae family. Roses, grapevines, you name it, they'll chomp on it. And the interesting thing about the biology of these guys is that these first ones that are out, they actually will emerge from now until probably the middle of August, at least some of them. The first ones out are the most important to control. And the important reason for that is, as these first ones feed, they act as scouts. And the pheromones, or the volatile materials released from the leaf as they feed, acts like a sign or a guideline for the next group that comes in. So if you can control the first group out there, you have much less of a problem over time. And I've got information on that. But I've also got some lines open. 1-800-859-0957. Or, of course, WGR.com /The Gardening Show. So you can email me. I can't email you back directly, but I'll certainly answer the question and try to do it on the show. And I hope you did. Stay tuned. The Gardening Show will be right back.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957, and we have lines open. And apparently we were talking about Japanese beetle, and I think we hit a nerve, at least with Charlene and Troy. So, Charlene, welcome to The Gardening Show. Charlene, are you there? Hello.
I went to the store and bought some of those Japanese beetles traps.
Uh-oh.
And then somebody later said, oh, well, what that does is it attracts them to your yard. They feed, they mate, then they go into the trap. So it's not a good idea. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I don't argue. I'm going to argue about the sequence, but they're right. The thing about the traps is that they are too good. A Japanese beetle can fly a quarter mile, half mile maybe. Mm-hmm. And those traps will bring in every Japanese beetle within that quarter mile radius.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's talk about that. First of all, they usually don't mate first. They come in and feed and then get trapped. The problem is not all of them get trapped. So it's sort of like a singles bar for Japanese beetles. So if you're thinking about grub issues and all that, the worst is right under the trap, always. Now, however, are they useful? Yes, they are. In certain instances, what you can do, and I know people who do this, especially rose growers, they know that this is going to happen. But what they do is put a trap every 15 or 20 feet all the way around the outside of their area. So the beetles come in, hit the traps first. Very few get into that, so they don't have to spray the roses as often. But that's kind of a unique issue. For most people, I don't suggest using the traps. They work too well. And it's a Charlene, and so, you know, I appreciate you bringing that up.
Well, thank you for answering my question.
Not a problem. Now, a couple other things while I got you on the line. Let's talk a little bit more about Japanese beetles. Do you have a big problem with them, or is it just that was just kind of a general interest question?
Well, I didn't have a problem, so I put up the traps, and then I started having a problem where they were coming in and eating everything.
Well, I think we could solve that problem very easily.
So I quit the traps.
Okay. The thing about it, as you were listening, is you've got to get these first ones that are just emerging now. And there's lots of materials if you are convenient to, if you want to spray. They're fairly easy to get, you know, kill. The problem is if you're an organic grower.
No.
You don't. Well, if you're an organic person, there are very few things out there that work or work very long. If you go the synthetic route, check my website, WJR.com/The Gardening Show, after went by Wednesday morning. And there's a list that I'll put up there about Japanese beetle control methods. And most things work. And they'll give you the bulletin from it's Colorado State. Says about 2 weeks protection. I've never seen that. So take that with a grain of salt. Usually I'm spraying about once a week. But anyhow. The other thing is, if you do have, you want to use organic materials, neem oil is a very common material out there. Works for about 3 to 4 days. The problem is that you've got to buy the material that has, it's called azadactrin. It says it right on the label. That's the active pesticide or insect control material in the neem oil. It works 3 or 4 days. Neem oil is kind of neat, though, with azadactrin. It kills on contact, but it also is a repellent. But that's about 3 or 4 days, and that's about it. So it's one of those things. I still go out and just knock them off. You know, they have that drop reflex. So if you just tap the leaf and have a bucket of soapy water or something underneath it, that works real well, too, if you don't mind doing that. So there are options.
Okay.
Some people just don't like touching them, and I can understand that, too. So, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you for the information. You're exactly right. 1-800-859-0957. And Charlene, I do appreciate that because I didn't have that one in my notes. So when I was talking about it, you brought up an excellent point. Let's go to Tom in Gross Eel. And then Bob in Sterling Heights, you're going to be up next. So, Tom, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Thanks for taking my call.
What's going on?
What I'm dealing with an old tree that was hit by lightning, cut up for firewood, and then I had the stump ground out, and now I have this place I'm trying to put a new tree.
Okay, sure.
So it's the same place.
Yeah.
Now, it's a year later.
Right.
The mulched up maple tree, I have rototilled in soil, and then I'm trying to attract the cedar waxwing, so I got a service berry tree.
Oh, yeah. Nice tree.
And then I built a barrier around it because I got deer.
Okay.
That would worry a little tree. And it's just not thriving.
Right.
Is there something I can do,
yep,
fertilizer-wise or
yep. Yep.
some other additive? Because the service berry leaves, which it's only about a, you know, 18-inch tree,
mm-hmm.
they're turning brown.
Okay. A couple of things. You ground the when the stump was taken out, you ground it out, and they took the sawdust away, or did they just pile it there and then you reused it?
They just piled it there, and I spread it around my yard as mulch.
Okay.
But it was mostly still there, but so was all the dirt. So it's the sum of the two.
So you mixed them together.
Yes, and then of course I brought in new soil, mm-hmm. and enriched it and rototilled that in, but left some of that to rot. So
okay.
Then I put fertilizer in it,
all right,
like 10-10-10, because I knew that.
Yeah, go ahead.
For it to rot, I knew I had it run out of nutrients or something.
Well, the nitrogen, the sawdust, the bacteria that are breaking down the sawdust are very, very good at taking up nitrogen, better than the plant. So you've got to up your fertility rates with nitrogen source at least 10-20%. Than over what you normally would do, and you're going to find that you probably have to apply like two or three times, probably at least twice this year and maybe late into the fall, which you normally wouldn't do.
So now, I got some flowers out there. The symptoms on those are that instead of the normal green, they're lighter
right.
yellow or green. Is that the lack
That's
of nitrogen?
That's the nitrogen. That's the nitrogen. Now,
okay, so what source of nitrogen would you recommend?
10-10-10 works. You probably, especially with a new plant or anything like that, any of the garden fertilizers will work. Actually, yeah. Do you fertilize your lawn?
I have, but...
Do you have any of the lawn fertilizer around? That will work better. It's just got more nitrogen in it.
Okay. How about just straight ammonium nitrate?
If you can, yeah, you can't buy it anymore.
Well, I have a way.
Well, okay. If you do, but go,
that?
I would, you know, to, unless you're really good with that, Tom, and had some experience, go with something else. That's hot. A little bit too much is, you know, it's
That was why I was worried that I had too much. I don't know the symptoms of
the symptoms on your annuals, that's low nitrogen. The browning of the tips and everything, now that could be high nitrogen, although I doubt it.
Okay.
I think when you put the serviceberry in, it was in a container, right, or was it bare root?
It was bare root because
okay.
I bought it through the mail.
Okay, that's fine. Actually, it works better if they're bare root. However,
nobody has them around here. I looked like
you got to look kind of hard. Certainly, none of the box stores or any place like that carry them. Some of the real good service. You got a nursery on Grosse Isle there. Did you check with them?
Yeah, they didn't have it.
They didn't have it.
And they're real good.
Yeah, I talk to Denise every time.
They're excellent, but there's no call for, there's no demand for this.
Let me talk about that plant. You're on the sand down there on the island, right? It's not in.
I'm on clay.
All right. Here's where I think, and maybe we have, especially with all the rain, I think we may have an issue. What I want you to do is, even we go out. You know, it's supposed to be raining on Monday. If it rains, go out and do a little digging down the side of that edge of the hole and see if there's water in the bottom.
Oh, okay. But here's what I did. I built it up above the ground level.
Yeah.
So it's way up high.
Well, it shouldn't be there, but I'd still check. You know, it's easy to do.
Okay, but that's what I did because of the fact I know that if I went in the hole, I'd be in pure clay.
Oh, yeah, there
so
you
I'm
go.
So I'm elevated off the normal...
Double check it just to make sure there isn't something holding it back. But
well, I have a huge mound which I expect to rot down.
Okay.
I still check
when you've got that much organic matter and everything in it. I get a little worried. Tom, hang on the line a bit. Background music means that Shannon says that I need to take a break. If you would stay on the line, we'll talk a little bit more about raised beds and things. You can join this conversation. 1-800-859-0957.
Now, back to the gardening show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957 or WJR.com/The Gardening Show. And we were talking to Tom in Grosse Isle. Tom, welcome back. Thank you for holding. I would check the watering just in case. Fastest way to kill a plant that I know of is have it through some water. And I don't know, it's a raised bed and everything, but I've seen a couple instances where things have gone wrong and all of a sudden you figure out there's a water issue down there. The other thing I'm a little bit concerned about, and I've seen this more than once too, where people have built up a nice raised bed and everything, or especially over a clay layer. And what happens is that the roots only penetrate into the organic matter in the raised bed. They don't go down deep. And as that material works down, rots down, you got an issue. In other words, the roots just have no place to hold water and things like that. So be aware of that.
But it's a tiny tree. I mean, it's...
Down the line. This is not an issue now. But down the line, as that tree grows, it's going to build out a root system. And hopefully it will penetrate into the clay because that's what it's going to be left with once that organic matter and everything breaks down.
The root system of an old maple tree that ought to be rotting as it goes.
It will. It will. So hopefully it'll break it up. I've seen it happen. It's something to keep an eye on. What I think is happening if your serviceberry is that it's just growing a new root system. And as that root system gets more established, you'll see that the top growth gets normal again because it's just running out of water. If the maple tree was hit by lightning, it wasn't diseased in any way, or, they all are, but nothing serious. I don't see any problem with that except the extra nitrogen. The only other possibility was if by mistake some of the nitrogen granules in the fertilizer got right up next to the roots and caused a root burn. But that would be.
See. That's why I was thinking about liquid ammonium nitrate. You could
do it. Just watch the rate. And if you're comfortable with it, of course, it's the best source you've got. But watch the rate. Don't overdo it. I'd rather see you apply a lower rate two or three times than a real high rate once.
Yeah. Well, I think of this as like first aid or something I'm doing here.
I agree. It's
already showing some negative
signs. I think it's, from what you're describing, the most likely thing is that that root system just isn't established. And when that happens is that the top gets water stressed. And especially if you get this weather where we've had real cloudy days, the leaf starts to come out. It isn't very thick. It hasn't built up any resistance to stress. And then we get a sunny day, which we haven't had that many. And the heat hits it, the sun hits it, and now it's under water stress, and the roots just can't pump enough water.
Should I cut a little off the top
No.
so it's got less leaves to support?
No. You know, everybody says that, and I and the reason for that is it's called a source-sink relationship if you're talking to a plant physiologist. What happens is that the nutrients and the water and everything are pumped or supplied to the greatest sink, the part of the plant that has the greatest draw. And the top always has the greatest draw, especially if you prune it back and it starts to regrow new shoots and everything. All of the nutrients or a good proportion of them will go up instead of down. And when that happens is the root system starves out. And when you don't get that initial surge of root growth, it's always behind. It never comes back to what the potential is. So unless you're pruning for shaping it because you've got some wild growth that you just got to get out of there, or something like that, or damage, something got broken.
No, it's so small I didn't consider pruning it, but now that I got some leaves that are turning brown, that's
don't,
what...
Don't, unless they're totally dead and you can see that the growing trip is done, don't keep the pruners in your pocket on this because it really will screw up the rooting. It will not become established as quickly or as securely as you would hope. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck with that. I think you're just going to have to wait it out. And I think the plant will do just
fine. Is there anything I ought to know about a service berry that's difficult or specific to it?
No.
It's a native tree, isn't it?
It's a native tree. There's a few insects that hit it, but it's no big deal. They don't like wet feet very well. So, again, it's a drainage issue down the line someplace. Don't over-fertilize them. They don't need it. They don't, you don't want them to overgrow. And they're very, I wish more people would use it. It's one of those things, Tom, that they've gone out of favor because years ago, everybody had serviceberry. It's just yard people had them. And then the designers and people said, I don't like that anymore. And, they've kind of fallen out of favor, but they're a wonderful plant.
We're trying to get the cedar waxwing. We've seen them, but they're not around my yard. I've got a mulberry, and they've just stopped and then kept going.
I think at least I see a cedar waxwing around our house for about a week, and then they move further north. Enjoy them while you've got them, and I think the serviceberry certainly will help. Good luck with it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Bob in Sterling Heights, and then John in Clinton Township. Stay on the line. You're up next. Bob, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, Dean. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Got a couple of trees I'm concerned with. I've got a white pine, which I've got a ranch house, and a white pine in the backyard that's well above my roof line.
Okay.
I'm wondering what the proper way to trim that is.
Get a pro in.
I'm sorry?
Get a professional in to do it.
Get a pro in to do that?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic, Bob. Why do you need to prune it? I guess I should go that route first. I'm sorry.
It's really just getting large for the area that it has to work with, so it's blocking off too much of the yard.
Okay. One of the problems with a white pine or any of the pines is you're not going to be able to do massive amounts of pruning. You can thin it, and a professional can do that. But if that tree is up above your roof, you're talking about a fair amount of weight up there. And unless you're comfortable strapping on, a belt and climbing the tree and using chainsaws and all that, this is a job for a professional, in my opinion.
Well, What about the very lowest branches? Should those be taken off, or should those,
be left? You can do either. That's an aesthetic decision. Doesn't harm the tree if you do it right. But it's more of an aesthetic, you know, if you got a mow under it and it's too low or something like that. The issue, though, Bob, and I'm sure you've already noticed this, is there's not going to be much growing under that tree, even if you prune those limbs up, because it's dark under there, and it's more importantly, it's very dry, because the pine, just the shape of the pine makes all the water run off away from the underneath. So that's going to be a tough area if you're thinking about growing something under it.
Now, on my Japanese maple, should I wait till the fall to trim that back a bit?
No. You
can do
that.
You can
trim it now. Again, Japanese maples, I'm a little bit... The best time to do it is to be in the middle of the winter, to be honest with you, because you can see the shape. But if you've got a branch that's obviously got to be taken out or anything, you can do it now, sure.
Okay.
Just don't wait real long to do it, because the closer we get to August, the greater the chance that you may get a rogue shoot coming back, and that shoot will not be hardened off by the time the main, you know, we get a killing frost.
I see.
If you're going to do it, do it now. How much trimming do you have to do on that one?
It's just some branches that got, I guess, a little bit carried away and are extended too far away from just the general shape of the tree.
If you're going to wait until in the middle of winter, it's probably best for the tree. If you can't wait, go ahead and do it.
Okay.
But you don't need any pruning paint or anything like that. It'll actually slow down the healing. But the main thing is that you can, if you look at that branch where it comes out, there's a swollen area between right at the bottom of the branch where it hooks into the stem. You got to leave, it's called a collar, and you got to leave that on. So I leave about a half-inch stub outside the collar so you don't injure the collar, because that's where the healing will occur, at the collar, not at the stub.
Okay. One other quick comment. Listening to you a couple weeks ago, you were talking about different trees.
Right.
A number of years ago now, from Ray Wiegand's, I got a paperbark maple.
They're lovely.
Acer griseum.
Yeah.
Very interesting tree, and you rarely see it. Really a nice trunk.
You know, the thing about it, I guess I'm going back to my argument why I always suggest going to your local family-owned nurseries and garden centers. They're the ones that are going to have these kind of things or get them for you. And there are so many trees out there, as you pointed out, Bob, that are wonderful just to grow in the summertime, but also provide winter interest. You know, these are really fascinating things. But more, everybody sees what they see, and, okay, we got a maple and you got this. And yeah, that's a limited palette, and there are so many wonderful plants out there that we just don't use. You're right.
You know, in my case, you're right, Rob. My house faces the west, so I get a lot of weather coming in during the wintertime. And Wiegand's recommended this tree, saying it would be quite hardy to work against the wind and the harsh weather.
It's a tough tree. The other thing about it is, I don't know about you, but with that bark against a snowbank or something, that's pretty nice to look at, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just a
nice
tree overall. It's a great tree. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate the comment, too, because it is true. No question on that. There's so many, many trees. Going into that, I was mentioning earlier, if you look at the June 20th information on my website, look for the information of Jesse Saylor and play with that site, that link a little bit, and just see how many great plants we can grow here in Michigan that you never heard of before. It's just amazing. Or talk to a really, really good designer, or go down and spend some time with your local family-owned nursery. Stay tuned. The Gardening Show. We'll be right back.
Now, back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
1-800-859-0957. And before we go back to John in Clinton Township, I need to thank two very important people. Of course, that's Shannon Maley, who is our producer today, and Mike Statz, who is working the line. So thank you both.
He got it!
You got that right. So couldn't do this show without them. And they remind me of that every so often, and they're right. Let's go to the lines. Let's go to John in Clinton Township. John, welcome to the Gardening Show, and thank you for being so patient.
Dean, you're doing a great job of answering questions. I've got a crabapple tree where some branches are tied up against the neighboring branches.
Sure.
And going to YouTube, I see that it probably, for pruning a regular apple tree, it may for summer pruning, it may be 2 or 3 weeks early. When would be a good time to remove these branches that should have been cut out before they started rubbing up against other major branches?
It's a good question. The thing that we're talking about is why you prune fruiting trees, you know, apple fruits trees, in the summertime. And the reason is to restrict growth, not to shape them so much. Mainly, if a tree is really growing quickly and it's not producing the fruit load that you want, a producer will go out in August, probably or so, and prune lightly, really slows the growth rate down. And when that happens, you get more flower buds to set and you get more fruit the next year, and that's why we do it. If I've got to do major limb removal and things like what you're talking about for your crab apple, John, I'd wait and until next spring, okay? Unless there is, you're seeing the, where it's rubbing and it's, you're actually wearing the bark away, something like that. Branches where it's going to break, some real reason that you got to do it. The best time to prune is when they're, you know, cold, dormant. Just they heal better. Now, you know, you can do it any time, as I said. But I'd rather, if you can put up with it and just make sure it happens next spring, I think it'd be better for the tree.
They're tight, but we'll wait.
If you can't. Now, when you get that situation where you got two of them limbs crossing and they rub against each other and you got an open wound type of thing, that you need to take one of them out right now because that just invites insects. And that's one thing we want to avoid. But if you can wait, I think I'd wait.
They're very tight. Well, no way to know if there's any wound or not.
Okay, good.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate the question. You know, and it's one of those things, it's when you go to YouTube or any of these other things, yeah, they're right, but why do you do what we do? And in the case of fruiting trees, we prune not to shape them, but to force more flower buds. So, 1-800-859-0957. Or you can email me, wgr.com/thegardeningshow, and I've added all kinds of information. Remember that if you're looking for specific information or something like that, wait until Wednesday morning. It takes me a little while to get my information to the webmaster, and she does a wonderful job as soon as I get it to her, so it's my fault. But by Wednesday, we're usually in pretty good shape. So check it then. Will in Bloomfield Township emailed me. He's got lots of silver maple seed pods. When do you get break them up? Well, they don't have any detrimental effect on your yard, really. They're just kind of a pain in the rear. You can rake them during the summer. Wouldn't be a bad idea if your lawn is a little on the thin side, and that just gets them done. They don't germinate till the next spring, so you won't deal with it then, unless they're just in really heaps or something. They don't harm the lawn, so whenever it's convenient to do it, it's up to you. You know, that's another point, though. It's a good question, Will. Last week I was mentioning a great article by Dr. Kevin Frank about fertilization, using fertilization on turf to increase weed control. Basically, the thick turf prevents weeds from germinating or prevents them from being so aggressive in our lawns. Now would be a good time to do that. And Will, the same thing on your case, because a real thick lawn, the maple seeds sit up on top and they don't germinate. Or they just get mowed, sucked up in the mowers, and that takes care of that. So now, you know, normally, unless you're on a four-step program, which you would normally fertilize at this time, other programs, I wouldn't suggest it, but this year I will. The reason is because of all the water. A lot of the fertilizer is just leached right through. It's gone. And we need to, your lawn's lightening up. We still got active growth, so an application of fertilizer at about a half rate of what you would normally are out now in the next next week, I think if your lawn's on the thin side or if it's off color a little bit, would be a great idea. Now, if you're one of those lucky people that have an in-ground irrigation system, you need to get on to add more fertilizer now because you, of course, you use your irrigation to keep the lawn growing. The rest of us who don't have that luxury and you're going to allow the garden or the turf to go dormant, probably I still go in with about a half rate, but definitely if you're going to keep it green. Just to remind everybody, weed sprays, chemicals just don't work very well right now, especially as it warms up. The weeds are just resistant to it. They just are not very good at all that kind of thing. So anyhow, so kind of lay off on the weed control. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to James in Toledo. James, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Well, thank you. First time I've ever called.
Well, I appreciate
any,
that.
Any radio show. I live in downtown Toledo. I have a small backyard. One of my favorite trees I planted about 13 years ago was a purple sand cherry.
Oh, yeah. Nice plant.
And I didn't really notice it till the spring, but about a third of it had died over the winter.
Okay.
And they tell me at the nursery that that's not unusual.
Right.
For that tree, 15 to 20 years is about its maximum life. So.
I agree.
Most of it's dying away now, and I'm just kind of wondering what would be another plant that doesn't. I had it shaped beautifully, and it was probably 9 feet tall, and that's about the height I want to go. So I was wondering what other tree might look nice in there.
There's a lot of them, but my question to you, James, is why not go back in with another sand cherry?
Well, I thought about that too, and I guess my age, I'll enjoy it for the rest of my life anyway. So.
Well, you know. I get, you know, it's a cost issue. There's cost to buy the plant. There's cost involved in putting it in the ground. You know, there's costs.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it, do you get the benefit back? And obviously, you've enjoyed this tree.
Very much, they are
beautiful. And we've had some miserable winters, so hopefully that's done for a little while. Who knows? I would seriously consider just, hey, taking that one out, as long as it's healthy and it was just winter killed, putting another one right back in. Because obviously,
well, what I've read is they're kind of prone to certain kinds of disease, and I can't honestly tell you what caused it.
Well, check here. You got an option, and the option would be go to check with Ohio State Extension. They're over at the Botanic Gardens. Give them a call and see about getting some samples taken just to confirm, or you know, it's just winter kill, which I think it probably was, or there's some other issue before you go back in. If you go to my website, wjr.com/thegardeningshow, June, if you go down at the bottom of the page, you'll find information from each show by date. If you go into June the 20th, somewhere in there, I was answering a question, someone had basic same question you had, and look for information from Jesse Saylor, S-A-Y-L-O-R.
S-A-Y-L-O-R?
Yeah, and it's a link. Click on that, put in the things that you have, characteristics, and let it go. See what they come up with. Okay?
Do I need to dig out the old root? I don't know what the root system is like.
You probably, if you're going to put a new one in, the whole plant comes up. Sure.
Okay. Very good. Well, thanks for your time.
Hey, appreciate the call, especially for somebody the first time. Great, James.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Speaking of callers, Jack in Shelby Township in Virginia in Lake Orion, stay on the line because... Hey, what happened to the time? I don't know. But we need. I will talk to you off the air. So, Jack in Virginia, don't hang up. I'll talk to you off the air. Background music means we're out of here. Alan and Charlotte, you question about peony diseases, check my website. I've got information on it. I think it's botrytis, which is not that big a deal. Your redbud and the Cusa dogwood, that's just common background winter damage. And what you need to do is check to see if they're still alive. And the easiest way is that just take your thumb and scratch the bark. If it's wet, moist under there, and it's green, they're still there. Hopefully that helps. Check my website, wjr.com/thegardeningshow. And have a fantastic week and enjoy the holiday and remember those who sacrificed to make us stay at this industry. Thank you.